Leslie, brought to you by Barfoot and Thompson.
On the show today, the fabulous leadership coach Jodie Shelley is back with lots of tips and tricks for our leaders out there. Welcome along to Property Matters. And another week is flying by, but we're not quite in December yet, so there is no Christmas music coming from me just yet, but we're not far off. Now, this year, we've had a big focus around leadership and growth for leaders, but, you know, anyone's a leader that wants to be a leader. So today is a chance to talk with a fabulous business and leadership coach, Jodie Shelley. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me. It's lovely to be back.
It's great to have you here, and I've had personal experience working with you, so I can verify Jodie's credentials. But for our listeners, let's go back in time. Before we even talk leadership and the importance of it, let's talk about you. Yeah. So take us back.
Tell
us a little bit about your career journey, because you've had some varied career sort of opportunities come your way, but a lot in the HR space.
Yeah, I've spent 20 years in HR. So I started my HR career at TVNZ back in the day, a long, long time ago.
Glad you're not there at the moment.
Well, they're doing it tough, aren't they?
Oh, they are.
But I started as an HR administrator, and I was lucky enough at that time to have the opportunity to go to Auckland Uni and do a postgrad diploma in human resource studies part-time, so I could work and also study but apply what I was learning, which was so great. And then my leaders at the time had the foresight to think, hey, we could make this role into half admin, half advisor. So I got the chance to do that. Then I became an advisor, an HR manager. When I moved to Lion, which was a couple of companies later, I had a very fancy title, which was leadership capability coach. I quite liked that. We all had very dramatic titles when I worked there. And then I went on to become business partner, head of people advice, and then chief people officer. And so, yeah, I had 20 years in corporate HR, learnt a lot, the ups and downs and the hard sides of things. And then I left and I thought, what is it that really floats my boat? What do I get joy from doing? And it was leadership development and coaching. And so I thought to myself, you know, if I had the power to create a future that I would be inspired to live, why wouldn't I? And I think we all do. We all have that opportunity, right? We just have to make it real. And so I created a little business called Human Code. And in that business, I'm totally focused on those two things, coaching and leadership development.
It takes some courage and leadership, I guess, of your own life to step away from, I'd imagine, a well-paying corporate job and going, I'm going to go and be self-employed.
Yeah.
Who sort of supported you, I guess, through that journey? Or did you just go, nah, this is it, I'm doing it?
Well, my husband, I have to thank him, because obviously it was a bit of a leap of faith. You know, moving out from corporate into self-employment for anyone is a bit of a leap. But he gave me the confidence that, you know, we'd give it a go for a year and see what I could make of it, and he would continue to try and pay the bills, and we'll see if we're still married at the end of that year. We were, which is good. But I had in the back of my mind an exit plan. So I would, you know, I had this little diary note that said, if it's not working, go and talk to this person at this recruitment agency. And I just kept on moving that, because each month it was going really well and I was enjoying it. I think that's the most important thing, is that getting that real sense of satisfaction.
Some satisfaction and just moving that post-it note.
I kept moving the post-it note for a year, and then I thought, I don't really need that post-it note anymore. And now I'm nearly, you know, coming to the end of my third year in business and, yeah, thoroughly enjoying it.
When you look back at your 20-plus years in that corporate career, what were some personal highlights for you?
We did a lot of work when I was at 2 Degrees, we did a lot of work around the culture. The culture there was something pretty phenomenal, and I can't take the credit for that, because it came from my predecessor, who was just really unique in her thinking. So she was at 2 Degrees when there were, you know, 4 or 5 people around a photocopier that early. And then when I joined the organisation, she interviewed me and said to me, hey, we don't have policies here at 2 Degrees. And I was like, what? Like, my whole life is around policies, you know, being in HR, and there's a policy for this and a policy for that. But you know, that sounds interesting, tell me more. And her whole philosophy was that we were a kind corporate. You know, we were an organisation that always did right by our people, and we really wanted to maintain that. And you could have that idea as a startup, but as you start to mature and as we started to compete with the big players, you know, at that time it was Telecom, now Spark, and Vodafone, now One, you know, we were starting to get taken really seriously. And the challenge of maintaining that beautiful culture when you start to become a more mature and more serious and auditable entity was pretty tough. So I think that's probably a big highlight for me.
That's cool. When it comes to coaching, if you had to sort of sum up a definition in a sentence or two to someone, what is a leadership coach?
And over to you. Look, leadership coaching is all about meeting a leader where they are at and tailoring development for them specifically. So it's all about partnering with somebody to help them to achieve the growth that they want.
Right.
And we do that through really careful questions, helping leaders to have moments of epiphany themselves, those aha moments themselves, rather than coming in and going, this is what you need to do, A, B and C.
Yeah.
We come in and we go, hey, what are your thoughts? How might we...
So different to a manager who would probably go, well, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
This is giving the power back to that person.
Yeah, although leaders can also, managers can also use coaching as a technique. So what we know about, you know how I said the aha moment or that moment of epiphany, when we have those moments, we release dopamine, and it's such a lovely feeling, that dopamine hit that we get. And so we get that when we discover things ourselves. We don't get it so much when we are told the answer to something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what leaders and coaches set out to do is to give people the opportunity to have their own aha moments. Because what we know about it is, A, it feels nice, and B, the learning is stickier. So if I tell you something today, you'll go away and you go, yeah, Jodie told me that. Oh, you know, and it might fall out of your mind and you might come back to me next week and go, how did we do that again? But if I coach you and you discover it yourself through all the questions that I ask you and you answer yourself, then that learning is much stickier. You're never going to come back to me and ask again. So I think if leaders can coach, it's
brilliant skill to have.
Absolutely, and it's short-term pain for long-term gain. You're not going to have people revolving door coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you were to go back in time now, put your HR hat on, and you're writing the job description for a leadership coach, what are the attributes for the actual person doing the coaching? What do you need to be or have to be a good leadership coach?
Yeah. I think that you have to be a really good listener. That is a key skill. It's really good to have a couple of accreditations. The accreditations help you to get some really good coaching skills under your belt and prepare well. I think that you can't always just be a cheerleader. You have to be a little bit, you have to be able to challenge gently, but you have to be able to help people to stretch, help people to grow, help people to see things from a different perspective through clever questioning. So you have to be attentive, I think.
Are there times as a coach where, you know, you've questioned, you've created the safe space for them to come up with the idea, but sometimes you then need to go, no, you're down the wrong path, or you've hit the nail on the head, just stop there and make that happen? Do you actually sort of give that opinion if needed?
Yeah, you, as a coach, you are trying to not give your opinion on things, but there are times when you can see that it would really benefit your client or the coachee if you were to just share, like, let me off the hook here, Tony, like, help me out,
I'm not seeing it.
And in those moments, we always ask for permission. So would you be open to a view here? Would you be open to a different perspective? And if the coachee says, no, I'm still working on it, then fine, we'll just back in our box. But more often than not, they'll say, yes, please, let me get a different perspective from you, and then you can go there. But ideally, a really good coach will lead the person there through great questions.
Who comes for coaching? Are we talking CEOs, just managers, outside of the corporate sort of work world? Are there other organisations that send people for coaching?
Yeah.
Who can get coached?
Anybody can be coached. Yep. I have got CEO clients, I've got middle management clients. I've had clients in the past that had no direct reports. They just wanted coaching because they wanted a different kind of development to what they've had before.
Mm.
And as I said, you know, coaching meets the person where they're at. So it doesn't matter whatever the client wants to focus on is what we'll focus on. So wherever they're at in their journey through their career, you know, a coach can partner. Executive coaching, executive coaching is designed for largely leadership. And so, you know, that's super helpful for the likes of the leaders because you've got lots of sandpit to go and play with the new skills that you're learning.
Now, you have a number of different styles and techniques that you use, and I guess what I would probably deem as different programs that you can sort of bring in to suit the person you're coaching. Do you want to talk us through a little bit about what they look like?
Yeah, there's lots of different approaches that we can take. A couple of models that kind of bubble up to the surface for me that I find really universally good for lots of different people. One of them is the SCARF model that was designed by this guy called David Rock. And SCARF stands for a whole lot of different things that are our psychosocial needs. So they stand for status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness. And they are all of the things that we need to feel content or feel secure or psychologically safe at work. They can also represent psychosocial threats. So, you know, if our status is impinged, we can feel quite thwarted at work. If we don't have certainty, it can be uncomfortable. We need to feel like we've got ownership of our own stuff. So that's there. And I think that's really useful for us to reflect on where we're at ourselves.
Mm.
Working through the SCARF model, but also really nice for leaders to look at their people and think, somebody in my team is not themselves, what's happening for them? Is it their status? Is there something I can do about that? Can I reinforce that they're highly valued and I really love them being in my team? Or can I create more certainty, share more information or that sort of thing? So it's a really good model for lots of different reasons. The other one that's quite universally useful is the work of Robert Keegan. So he did a lot of work around adult development, and a couple of the layers of development, there's lots of them, but we'll only talk about two. A couple of the layers of development that he talks about is this idea of the socialised mind. So we get to a certain point in development, and say about 60 to 70% of adults get to this point, where we really care deeply about what other people think about us, and it causes us anxiety and angst, and we make decisions based on our reputations or what people will think of us. But if we can evolve higher than that and get to a point where we're in the self-authored mode of thinking, then we know who we are and we know the contribution that we make, and we're really comfortable with who we are. And other people's views of us are interesting but not cause for anxiety or any, you know, ill feeling. And that can be really liberating. So helping our people to think about, how do I get to that self-authored stage and stay there as much as I possibly can? We often slip back down to socialised, but, you know, helping people to have that confidence to stay up there and be in that self-authored space is really so fun as a coach. I love those two models.
So, yeah. The status thing is interesting, and I think we probably underestimate its importance as a leader to look about the status of each member in our team.
Yeah.
Do you find leaders are too often looking at their own world, not their team that they're leading, to see that?
Yeah, that can be a bit of a trap. We do fall into this world where we're so busy. And, you know, one of the companies that I work with, they've made the B word a swear word. Mm. You're not allowed to say busy because everyone's busy, and how busy is busy? And let's just, you know, try and put that away. But leaders do fall into that trap that I've got so much on at my plate and I'm dealing with all of the things above me and then fail to notice what's happening below. And in fact, I'm guilty of that. I when I became the chief people officer, I was in an acting role. So I was doing my old role and my new chief people officer role, which was pretty big. And unbeknownst to me, while that was all happening, I was just in sort of mad chaos mode. But unbeknownst to me, as somebody in my team had stepped up and was really smoothing things over in the background for me and was really burning the midnight oil trying to make things better for me and the team. And I didn't notice until it was too late, and it wasn't sustainable for her, and I can understand why. And ultimately she resigned. And I thought, man, that's a good learning for me. Like, instead of being totally focused on me and keeping all those balls in the air, I'd completely lost sight of the team. Mm. And as a result, I lost a very valuable, you know, team member at that time. So you can get a bit lost in that that busyness as a leader and forget to look down what's happening with the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are they tracking?
Now, within this, you also have programs that you use, one being the LSI program. How do you determine which style of coaching to go down with somebody, and what are they?
Yeah. So I kind of offer a couple of different offerings. One is that we just do coaching, just straight out coaching. We get together, we talk about what you want to achieve, and we work from there. And the other is we start from a place where we take an assessment called the LSI, which stands for Lifestyles Inventory. And what the LSI does is it provides you with information about what are the styles or behaviours or ways of showing up that are really serving you well, that you have adopted and are really working. And what are the styles that perhaps aren't working as well or aren't serving you quite as well? And how might we move towards the more constructive styles and away from the more passive and aggressive that don't serve us? And that is all about unlocking the potential. I mean, both ways of coaching is about unlocking potential, but with the LSI we start from a place of really deep insight. It helps people to get a really good understanding of ourselves as a starting point, and then we can work from there with the coaching. The other beautiful thing about LSI is we can invite other people to fill the assessment out on us. So we get insight about how we are operating ourselves, how we think we're operating. And then we can have a little bit of a a reality check and go, this is how you're showing up for others. So you can have up to 12 people answer an assessment about you and how you show up. And then you get to compare the two, and we can go from there. Have some fun.
Have some fun. Have you? It's quite confronting. I've done it myself, right. Looking through it. Have you had leaders react poorly to the feedback from a team, like just totally not expecting it?
Yes, yep, definitely. So one of the things that we talk about before we put anybody through LSI is the Sarah cycle, which is like a cycle of grief, if you like. So people go through shock, and they go through anger. They can go through rejection before they get to the last two letters, which is acceptance and help. And so we do expect, sometimes it can be a bit confronting learning what other people think about you, particularly if it's not the same as you see yourself, or if it's quite passive, or if it's quite aggressive defensive, it can be quite a shock. So we do talk a lot about that, readying people for that any emotional experiences that bubble up for you are normal. That's perfectly normal. And yes, I have seen people go through. I've had somebody do that in front of me when they've got their first results. Do all three, shock, then to anger, then to rejection, all in the course of a 2-hour meeting. So, yeah, it can be quite confronting, but I think at the end of it, and once you've had a chance to really absorb what you're seeing and have some time and allow our non-conscious mind to process what we've seen and make sense of it, I think we're much better off for it. It's such a rich way to get feedback, and such a non-confrontational way to get feedback. And Kiwis are this is a gross overgeneralization that I'm going to make, but Kiwis are not great at giving feedback to each other. We're just too soft, largely. And so having the opportunity to get really rich feedback and very detailed reports, so powerful.
And is it something that should be reassessed? So, they do coaching, they go off and do some leadership programs and just general management, and then do you, a year or two down the track, look at it again?
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea behind LSI is that you can absolutely get retested, and I've got a group of leaders at the moment that we retest every 12 months. And so that is fascinating. So we start out and we get the LSI, have a look at that, do some coaching, think really carefully about what goals we want to set that relate to LSI, and then retest and go, where have we moved the dial? And what I'm finding is that for a lot of leaders, they have moved the dial for their own thinking. So when they do the LSI one, which is their own view of themselves, they can see movement. They can see their constructive styles growing and the less constructive styles shrinking. And that's so lovely. They're yet to see the shift with LSI 2, which is others' views of them. And that can be a little bit confronting too. It's like, hey, I've put on all this work and nobody else is seeing it yet. But that's because this stuff takes time.
Yeah.
So you can make the change, but your perception with other people is being, has already, you know, it's been laid down over years of working with them. So you're trying to break down your own habits first and then the perceptions that others hold of you, which is heavy lifting.
What's the difference between something like LSI and a 360 feedback type model?
Yeah, well, LSI to a certain extent is a 360 because you get the 12 different people giving you feedback, and you can break that down into, what does it look like for just my direct reports? What does it look like for just my leader? What does my leader think about how I operate? What do my peers think? And then you've got a whole other group. It could be clients, external suppliers or something like that. And so it does serve as a 360. Some 360s, you've got more opportunity for, you know, verbatim, so people can actually put comments in, whereas LSI just sticks to, you know, there are about over 200 different items that people are responding about you, but there's not really much space for, you know, individual comments and that sort of thing. So that's probably the key difference. But the LSI to others' views of you is really rich information. There's a lot in the reports that you get back.
And if someone's, say, a new manager, you know, and you're leading a team, not ready to do something like an LSI yet, they're a bit nervous, do you have like a program that they can go down to sort of build their own leadership skills that sort of mixes with the coaching?
Yeah, I mean, if they're not ready for LSI, then I would recommend that they just do coaching.
Right.
Just coaching. Let's work out what's holding you back from doing LSI. What are the big things that you want to grow before you move to that point? But there's also another leadership program that I work on with an external company. They hold the IP and I facilitate sessions with people. And the idea behind that program is all about taking theories and putting it into practice. So we take a collab of people in one organisation. We put them through a monthly program, and we meet every single month to talk about what it is that they've been practicing from the theory that they've learned. So they do online learning, then they have a meeting with their boss, then they have a collab at the end of the meeting, at the end of the month, and all through the month they're practicing what they've learned. And I think that's really key, because you can send somebody off to a leadership development program on their own and they come back and they're really excited about what they learned, and then nobody back at work talks the same language, nor are they particularly interested. And then our brains kick in, because our brains love habits. Breaking, you know, creating new habits or breaking old habits in particular is really hard work. And so we just slide back into our old habits and nothing really changes. Whereas if you take a group of people from the same organisation, give them a common language, give them the same sorts of things that they're trying out and practising, and then hold them to account with a monthly collab where they all get together in a room and I go along and go, what have you been trying? What have you been learning? Tell me all about it. What's been hard? You know, how have you been stretching those comfort zones out?
You know,
it's much more, you know, it's practical. I think that's really attractive for me in terms of the leadership programs that I want to be involved in, is you can see the change.
How do you upskill yourself?
Yeah, so I try and keep abreast of what's happening in my industry. At the moment, I'm reading a book which is all about AI and coaching, the future of coaching, the future of AI. I've just finished a program called Brain-Based Conversations, which is all about neuroscience and how our brains work with the art of coaching, which has been so fun. And next year I'm doing another kind of neuroscience-y course, which is provided by a company called Coaches Rising. So I just try and keep abreast of things, keep my skills fresh and practice on unsuspecting like yourself, Steve.
Do you have a coach that coaches you when you need to sort of bounce a tricky situation or something off somebody else?
Yeah, there are coaching supervisors that kind of keep an eye on us.
Okay.
I've also had a really great coach when I was in my corporate life, and she was astonishingly good. And so, you know, I keep in contact with her and run things by her. Also, the wonderful woman who ran the ICC coaching program, you know, if I'm ever really stuck, I can go and talk to Rachel Ford, and she's just fantastic as well. So, yeah, there's a few. And the other thing that I do that it's really good for me as a coach is I've got a coaches cohort, and we meet once a quarter, and it's all people that are coaching, whether they're in-house coaches, external, setting up their own business, whether they're doing one of the coaches on that group does outplacement coaching, and we just get together and yarn for an hour, talk about books that we've read about coaching and all that sort of thing. So
just that shared knowledge space by like-minded individuals.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you don't run the risk of getting stale with your coaching. I believe that I just have to keep evolving. I can't say, oh, I'm a coach now and just do that for the next 15 years of my life. I need to keep fresh because the market changes.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned AI. I mean, that's competition for you coming up.
Yeah.
Coming up fast.
I did read an article yesterday on LinkedIn that was quite reassuring, which said that AI is amazing as a coach. So, you know, you guys can all go away and, you know, chat with ChatGPT on Copilot and have a go and say, be my coach and talk through a situation and see what you think. But the finding on this LinkedIn article is that it's great for very black and white
generic stuff.
And it will follow lots of, you know, protocols and things. But humans, thankfully for me, are much more grey and nuanced and complex. And so there's still a space for human interaction and human coaching. I'll read the book and I'll...
You mentioned before about in-house coaches. What's the pros and cons when it comes to choosing an external coach like yourself versus, say, a manager who wants to mentor inside your own organisation?
Yeah, so I've had experience of both. So when I was in my last corporate gig, we did a lot of work around setting up an internal coaching pool. And so they are people who are in corporate roles, not necessarily HR, they're in all sorts of different roles, technology, sales, whatever, but they've got an interest in coaching. And so we trained them up on the ICC program and let them loose in the organisation. Now, the benefit of that is that it cuts the cost for an organisation because you've got these in-house coaches who are passionate about doing it, and it gives them an opportunity to practice their skills. The downside, I think, of having an internal coach as opposed to an external coach is that an external coach is completely removed from your team, from the people that you work with, from the leaders that you interact with. You can have absolute confidence that nothing will be inadvertently shared. They are not coaching people that you deal with every day. I think one of the lovely things about coaching that sometimes gets a little bit underestimated is just having somebody to download with, just having somebody to go, oh, this all happened. You don't feel as free to do that with somebody at work that you are going to bump into in the lift door.
But actually, as a manager, to know that your person you're looking after, who's suddenly leading a team, for example, has that person to offload and download to, takes a bit of edge off you as a manager as well.
I couldn't agree more.
Because it's going to filter what comes back, because surely through the coaching it might be, well, you need to go and chat to your boss about these 3 points rather than the whole download.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Leadership as itself, the landscape, I guess, has changed, because gone are the days of staying put in a job forever and all of that. I think of my dad. He worked in a book publishing company, like, from when he was about 19, 20, worked his whole way up and ended up very much in a senior management role for most of his life. The health deteriorated, so he retired, got the gold watch, and decided, silly, to go and run a coffee shop. Could that not be more stressful than ever? And 2 years, went back to the same company, back into the same role, got a second gold watch when he finally retired another 10 years later. But I was like, that was his world. And I think there's a lot of people, you know, in our generation growing up in particular, that you worked your way up and you stayed put in a company.
Yeah.
Now, that does still happen in some places, but a lot less than it used to.
Yes.
how does leadership work when your leaders are constantly changing?
Yes, that's a really good question. And actually, I'll just add to what you were saying earlier. Both of my parents did the same thing. My mum and dad both started in the post office.
Wow.
And stayed in the post office their whole working lives. My dad was the postmaster when he finally retired.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, and mum the same. So I think, yeah, things are very different nowadays. You know, you feel like you're getting stale if you stay in a role more than, you know, 3 years or so. And so it is really tricky for leaders, particularly now too. I think there's also this new relationship with work. So yes, people are changing roles, but I do also notice that there's a different relationship with work where, you know, as we were going through our careers, I'm a little ashamed to say this, but our generation really prioritised work over a lot of other things. And now it feels like there's an emerging view that work is important, but it's only a part of my life. It's not my life. And it's important, but it's not more important than my well-being or my joy for life or, you know, those sorts of things. And so that's hard for leaders because, you know, if they're of the generation that grew up where work was, you know, paramount, and now they've got a whole team of people who see work as a part of my life but not my whole life, it's really difficult to navigate that. Because it's like, why aren't you working as hard as I worked when I was that age?
Well, I think we've noticed too that I know people have told me, you know, the 4:50 p.m. shift where you physically can hear the bags being packed up and everything and out the door, where we're very much of a culture as you left when your job was done for the day.
Yes.
Whatever time that might be.
Yeah.
But exactly. Now at 5:01, the place is empty.
Yeah. And I think what that is doing is it's starting to identify for leaders this new leadership style, which is compassionate leadership, and it's all about the well-being of our people and the engagement of our people and keeping people safe, psychologically safe at work, and you know, having inclusive teams and all of that sort of stuff. Because if we don't evolve, we will not retain, and if we don't retain good people with good IP, productivity is going to tank. And so we do have to just evolve. Like I said with my coaching, you know, I have to keep evolving. I can't get stagnant. You know, I can't stagnate. Same with leadership. We have to kind of go, this is the new normal.
So what do you think is some of the biggest challenges facing our leaders today?
Yeah, look, in my coaching conversations, I have a lot of conversations around imposter syndrome. So people feeling like they, maybe ill-equipped to do the job that they're in. That is not true. Almost all of the people that I coach are very capable people, and we work through some models to help them to identify actually they do have a lot of strengths and they should be there, and they were put into those positions for a reason. So I think that's a big one. Resourcing, so coming back to that issue where people aren't seeing work as important as what we might have in the olden days. you know, people trying to do a big amount of work with limited resources.
Yeah.
That's really tough. And then confidence. I think confidence in having hard conversations, in giving upward feedback to our leaders above us, and, you know, asking for what people need. Those are kind of three of the common ones.
You just mentioned giving upward feedback. Is the current economic and employment situation in New Zealand, does that make people nervous to be perhaps a little bit more aggressive or pushy or want more for their role because they are in fear of, actually, if I lose this job, there isn't necessarily something around the corner for me?
Yeah, I think that's possibly...
That plays a part?
I think it possibly does play a part depending on the relationship with the leader.
Right.
So if you have a really strong relationship with your leader and you know what you're dealing with, you feel psychologically safe, then you can have those conversations, irrespective of what the market looks like. If that relationship isn't there, then I would suspect that there might be some nervousness for people. It's like, is now the moment to push? Probably not.
Are there reoccurring problems that you see across all the different people you coach?
Yeah, I think that the imposter experience is the big one. Imposter experience. Like, it almost doesn't matter what level my coaching clients are at, I will have had a conversation with almost all of them about imposter syndrome, about how did I, it must have been luck that I got this job. And it's not. they got the job because they're capable people. But they're just that feeling of, hey, should I be here? Am I the right person? Do I have the skills that I need? And I think it does help to know that that is quite universal. Like, lots of people feel that way. And, you know, get a coach and we can help you build your confidence and get up to that self-authored stage of adult development and feel a lot better about yourself.
Who's inspired you over the years as a leader?
Oh, that's a really good question. Do you know, I've taken a lot from all of the leaders that I've had in my life, and I've had some great leaders and I've had some not as great leaders, and I can take learnings.
True.
I can take learnings from all of them. You know, when I've had a not as great leader, I've thought, man, I'm never going to do that to my people. And if I ever get to a leadership role, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to repeat that. Which is powerful, right? It's powerful stuff. Rather than, you know, necessarily having these role models to follow, we can also gain from both. I think from a coaching perspective, the coach that I had when I was in corporate was quite inspirational for me. She was life-changing for me. She really helped me to open my eyes about my full potential and gave me courage to, you know, to step out of the role that I was in. So, yeah, she was amazing.
Nice. Mm. All right, we've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to move into quick fire round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you ready? Quick fire round. I'll start off with a tough one. Obama or Trump for coaching, for leadership?
How very dare you. Of course, Obama.
Hillary Clinton or Oprah Winfrey?
I'd have to say Hillary.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
You get a car.
yeah, true. Top tip on getting the right coach, like finding that right person for you.
Yes, it's absolutely imperative that you get the right coach, and I would advocate always for a chemistry conversation with the coaches that you might interview before you go with one. It's okay to just have a coffee and see whether you vibe with that person. If you don't, run away. If you do, great. But yeah, the vibe has to be there. You really need to connect with someone, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Remote coaching. Can this all be done remotely for you? Do you know, we have a strong listenership in the South Island. Can someone down there get in touch with you and do this via Zoom, etc.?
Absolutely. So big shout out to the people of Shirley, who are big listeners of Property Matters. Yes, at the moment I do about 70-30, that's face-to-face 70 and 30 virtual. I love virtual coaching. Okay. It works really well for me. The reason that I've got 70 is that a lot of my clients have got PTSD from COVID times and they don't want to be on Zoom
anymore.
I'm
one of those, yep.
So I'm happy to come and meet face-to-face. Yeah. But equally, I've recently had a coaching client based in Wellington and that worked perfectly well.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, just all over Zoom.
Now, finally, when you are not coaching, you're also a book author.
I am indeed.
Tell us a little bit about your books, because it's Christmas time soon and we need to be shopping.
Yes, please, shop. So I have released two books. The first is called The Tui Has Landed. It was released last year and it became a finalist in the Wishing Shelf Awards, which
is an
international award.
What's that all about?
That book is all about a girl called Becky who loses her retail job, and then she stumbles across this woman called Anahita, and together they go and right a wrong. So it's all about friendship, gambling and revenge. There's a mystery character who slides down into a pit of addiction and problem gambling.
Okay, so this is not a children's book.
It's not a children's book. They go and break up a sex party in the suburbs and there's terrible
Definitely not a children's book.
And bad dating disasters. So it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of humour. It's a very Kiwi book. Love it. And the second one that came out this year is called 1,000 Paper Cups. And that's about the Lewis family, three brothers. And it explores homophobia and family harm. Again, there's humour in it. There's a sister-in-law called Emma who is a teacher. Only she hates parent-teacher interviews and she interacts with all these crazy parents and they put her in lots of different weird circumstances, and it's just, again, it's this humour in that one. It's another Kiwi story. I've got another one coming out next year and another one the year after that, which I'm sort of editing at the moment, so it's all go.
Brilliant. Sounds like you've gone with fiction with a message, though. You know, there's some underline there. Have you ever thought of joining the realms of leadership coaches writing the coaching book?
I have thought about that, I haven't progressed it at this stage, but, yep, it's in my mind that that could be quite fun. I'm just trying to work out how to bring humour into it.
Yeah. Do you write for pleasure? Like, is that your sort of downtime release?
Yes. So I started the first book when I was still in my corporate job because I was working all day and then oftentimes working most of the night. And this was just carving out a little bit of time for something that I felt passionate about and really enjoyed and was time for me. So that's where it started.
That is awesome. Yeah. Where can people go to find out more, get in touch and talk to you about coaching or having that coffee date?
Yes, very good. So the best place to go is my website, which is humancode.co.nz. And if anybody is looking for Christmas presents and they'd like to buy my two books, they can go to my writing website, which is jodyshelleywrites.com. And it doesn't matter how you spell Jodie or Shelley, because I've done all the SEO and you'll find it.
Clever. Brilliant move. Jodie, pleasure to have you on here. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with our listeners. And we'll catch up very soon for our next coaching session.
Fantastic. I look forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant. Thanks for tuning in. If you're driving home, drive safe. If you're listening to us on Spotify or your favourite podcast place, thanks for downloading it. A few weeks to go before we break for Christmas, so we'll catch you next Monday. Take care.